Welcome to Committing Faith in Public. This is the podcast for people who want to be inspired by individuals and communities of faith doing good work in public. Our guests tell stories of their work of weaving a more just, kind, and diversity-inclusive society. Our starting place for stories is Oklahoma because that is where we live, and because many people, both in Oklahoma and beyond, are surprised when they learn that interreligious friendly, pro-democracy, diversity welcoming, public good-oriented religion even exists in Oklahoma. So through this podcast, we're spreading good news and encouraging you in your faith and public life work. I'm Gary Peluso-Verden, President Emeritus at Phillips Theological Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and working on the Religion and Public Life Initiative for the seminary. I'm at All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. When folks from around the country think about religion in Tulsa, they are likely to think about Oral Roberts University, Victory Christian, or Rhema Bible. But many don't know about All Souls, which is the largest Unitarian church in the Unitarian Universalist Association and a potent progressive spiritual force in public life in Northeast Oklahoma. A recent documentary movie called American Heretics, The Politics of the Gospel, featured All Souls prominently. We're going to talk about that movie and All Souls today with two clergy leaders from All Souls. The Reverend Marlon Lavenhar is the senior pastor, and Bishop Carlton Pearson is an affiliate minister. Marlon has been at All Souls since 2000 and is a well-known leader in the religious and civic communities around here, especially in matters involving racism. Some of you may know Bishop Pearson, Carlton, from many other involvements, ministries, publications, music awards. The movie Come Sunday, available on Netflix, tells the story about his ministry before coming to All Souls, including his exile, if that's one of the appropriate words to use, from his religious home and religious family when he came to believe that, in fact, everyone is saved. Thank you so much for taking some time to be with me today.
It's great to be here.
Pleasure, absolutely.
Great. Great. All right. So first I want to hear a little bit about the congregation, about All Souls, and about you two. So tell a story about how you two got acquainted, since you would have been moving in other communities, I would think, than the ones that you're moving in now.
Yeah. So when I came here in 2000, Carlton was leader of a major church here in the city for a couple of decades. It was the only really significant interracial congregation, evangelical, non-denominational, with Pentecostal roots, called Higher Dimensions, Family Church. Mm-hmm. And he became onto my radar when we were interviewed in the news about George W. Bush's faith-based initiatives.
Okay.
And right. In 2000, and he was asking, he wanted to divert money to religious institutions. They wanted to know whether we thought this was a good idea. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a terrible idea. And he was speaking on behalf of it. And so the first time I saw him was on the news arguing against me. Of course, he was much more glamorous and well-spoken. And I said, wow, this guy is he's sharp, and I want to meet him. And so we began on the opposite sides of the aisle.
Right.
He
right.
wanted to meet me, and I wanted to meet him. Meeting and beating. So we had a happy 50% there.
Okay, so how did your relationship develop after that initial seeing each other on television and getting to know each other?
I don't know when we met after that, but the first I remember knowing him was not that particular TV program, but when I came out as a radical inclusionist and that all people would ultimately be in heaven and then I stopped believing in hell, that was closer to, of course, Universalism. And well, this church who gives their Sunday morning offerings away, and I'd never heard of that in my life, sent us an offering. We were losing everything. Our offerings had dropped, you know, tens of thousands a week. So I got an offering from them, and then I called him, and we got together for lunch, and I start picking his brain and found out that this church and its doctrines or dogmas or they don't have either, I guess. Their credulous belief system really touched me, and it bordered more on what I was doing as a Christian Universalist. So we started hanging out. Next thing I knew, we were here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few steps in between, and that was, the two that stand out for me was I lost my family. We lost our child, a three-year-old daughter, back in 2006. And that night, about 10 o'clock at night, I get a knock on the door, and it was Carlton. And he came in, and he ministered to me and my family. At that point, we, like you said, we'd been hanging out a little bit, but didn't know each other that well. Mm-hmm. But when he came and ministered to my family in the worst day of my life, that made an incredible impression, and I think it deepened our bonds. Then, when Obama was running for president, and Jeremiah Wright got in trouble with all the media and all that craziness was happening, I did a sermon about why Jeremiah was right, W-R-I-G-H-T, that went viral. And I got a letter back from Jeremiah Wright himself saying, thank you. He shared the sermon and all of that. And so when we were having lunch, I told him about the letter, and he knew Jeremiah Wright. And that really, in that conversation, that was the conversation at lunch that you said, maybe I should bring my church over to All. I should have brought it to All Souls instead of the Trinity, because we'd be, you guys are looking to build a multiracial congregation.
And he offered a spot here. We were a church without a home. We had lost our property and home. So we came in and began to, in their summer period, when they don't have an 11 o'clock service, or we took it. Mm-hmm. And we were 1 o'clock down at Trinity. We came at 1 at 11 here, and his members started coming.
Okay.
The Unitarian Universalists came to every service almost as in high numbers as we were. So I got really interested, and it felt very good that we could work together. There were no philosophical, really not very many theological differences. And so I thought this is a great place to plant and park as a ministry. And then I had an opportunity to go to Chicago, and I didn't want to leave my church pastoralist.
Right.
And so this man just fit the docket in every way, and the longer we hung out together, the more I realized this was All Souls, but it really wasn't all souls. It was all white souls, all rich souls, all middle Tulsa souls. So we wanted to add that to that allness, a more universal diversity, and he was 100% open to it, and it just kind of was like a hand in glove for a while.
And that was an incredible moment for the church. So all of a sudden, that had at that point had almost 90 years of history, and it was predominantly white. I mean, almost all white, middle class professionals, typically with higher education and that kind of thing, here in Midtown, a pretty fancy neighborhood in the city, to all of a sudden have an influx of a couple of hundred African Americans who have a Pentecostal background, worship in a very different way with a different liturgy and music. It was exciting. And so when Carlton said at the end of the summer, and I said, hey, we're going to have to start up our 11:30 service again. What time do you want to worship? You know, later on Sunday, Saturday night, we were going to figure that out. He said, you know what? I'm going to dissolve my congregation, and my wife and I are going to join All Souls, and we're going to enroll our children in Sunday school, and I'm going to invite my members to do the same thing. And so that was the beginning of something incredible, and it had high highs and some low lows as well, because the excitement was there for a few weeks, but pretty soon people started to realize, wow, it's real different around here, and that brought up some tensions and conflict, as you can imagine.
Right. Martin Marty wrote a book, I think, called A Nation of Behaviors. He said it's not so much doctrine that divides Christians in America. There's a number of years ago now. There are a lot of things that divide us these days, but not so much doctrine as it is behavior. So do we raise our hands in worship or not is a bigger deal for most people than how you say the Lord's Prayer,
that's right.
Theology.
And just to say, there were so many different factors. There was issues of class and theology, liturgy and culture, race, sexual orientation. You know, all of those things were at play. So it wasn't just one dynamic or another.
Right.
And so, you know, some of the African Americans, we had an out lesbian minister at that time in our church, and for some of them, that was just a little bit further than they could go. They were ready to go. As much as Carlton had prepared them for that openness around same gender loving families to have a minister, that, you know, they weren't all ready. So some people left because of that. You know, some of my folks left because they said, this doesn't feel like a Unitarian Universalist church anymore. You have people, you know, really praising God and raising their hands in the air as they do it, and there's drums and all kinds of things.
Hammond B3 organ.
Hammond B3. So some things changed around here, and it created quite a ferment.
Do you know of any parallel or similarly aligned type congregational experiment in the United States?
I don't know of any that have brought together Unitarian Universal that far into the progressive liberal spectrum with a Pentecostal background, and then with the on top of the racial difference. Right. I know there have been some congregations around the country have come together around race, across race, but usually of the same denomination and things like that, or at least very closely aligned theologically. So I think in some ways this is pretty far out there.
Yeah. It's an experiment. I would say a successful one because we've lasted.
How many years has this been?
That was 2008. So that was the summer of 2008 is what we're talking about, and now we're here. We are in the really fall of 2019.
Yeah. So not a flash in the pan.
No.
There might be something real here.
That's right. That's what it feels like.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one of the reasons why All Souls caught the attention of the producers of the movie. So let's get in the movie. But before I do, I need to, full disclosure, the seminary I've served for over 20 years was intertwined with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Our professor emeritus of New Testament, Brandon Scott, was on screen often, relating New Testament scholarship to contemporary expressions of Christianity. And the pastors of the other congregation prominently featured, Mayflower Congregational in Oklahoma City, are both Phillips graduates. And we awarded Marlon an honorary doctorate a few years back. So we do have connections with this movie, which made me particularly proud of it, and proud of those connections in the way that they were played out. But let's describe what this movie was about. So I would shorthand it this way, and I'm going to invite you to do the same. In the midst of a religious ecology here in Tulsa, that has grown some of the most powerful conservative Christian institutions in the world, both churches and schools, there are yet vital expressions of liberal religion. And here in the documentary were some of their stories. So how would you each describe what the movie was about?
You know, I think that's progressive religion in the heartland of the United States, the reddest of the red states, a state where Obama never won even one county in two elections. You know, here you have these progressive churches that are thriving, and I think that's an interesting story, because when people think of this flyover country of the United States and the Bible Belt, they don't imagine that there's some real life theologically grounded congregations doing progressive social action as well as ministry.
Right, if people have seen The Family on Netflix, which has strong Oklahoma connections, you think, well, that's Oklahoma.
Right.
This is not, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, American heretics and heretics in America would be two different things, you would think. If you were just doing American heretics, you'd probably be doing L.A. or New York or some of the extremities, not in the center of the country. This is like heretics in America. Or heretics in mid-America. The further you get away from the coast, the more conservative the fundamentalists the people tend to be, particularly in the South. So I was so involved in the main fundamentalist Pentecostal charismatic. Oral Roberts was like the godfather of the movement. And so I was like a protege and one of his sons. And here we had our big television ministry, and I had a huge conference that I hosted here of mostly African Americans coming.
The Azusa Conference.
The Azusa Conference coming from all over the world. Ours was the largest in the city for a number of years. And so it's a major shift. I never would have expected to be called a heretic. I guess that's the way I'm going to die now. Instead of Bishop Crompish, the man of God, the apostle of God, and all that kind of stuff. I'm a heretic and a son of a bishop rather than just a bishop. And so it's a fresh wind, and I think that this is the city where the new expanded way of thinking, even that Oral Roberts at one time went to Phillips Seminary when it was in Enid. I wouldn't have ever made the connection. Here you are now in Tulsa, and my affiliation with him, my connection to him and to the university, I was on their board of regents and all that kind of thing. So I think the movie is stunning. Its message is powerful, but that they're centering on people in the middle of America.
Right.
That's what sets it apart.
Right. If this was Boston, you know, this is not as much news, it seems to me.
And another thing, really, his spiritual father is Oral Roberts, and the spiritual father of this congregation, Dr. John Wolfe, those two gentlemen were contemporaries, and they were sort of titans of two different sides of the religious battle here in the cultural wars of Oklahoma and the United States, and that played out very profoundly here. So the fact that the next generation, the two of us, have come together and are collaborating in our ministries, I think, is a sign of real hope for...
And one of the real sensitive experiences of the Oral Roberts legacy and family was that his eldest son, who was gay and ultimately committed suicide, found his refuge and solace in this church, the only church in town where he felt that he could come. And we who were associated with Oral and the family and the university and institution felt resentful and suspicious. But probably more curious, what was it about this place that made a man we love so much, who had all these degrees, he had three PhDs in seven languages or something like that, and we thought it was going to succeed his father. Some people thought he was going to succeed his father. Some people thought I was going to succeed his father, as his, as he called me, his black son. So the unity of us, of him finding solace here, and then me, another one of Earl's sons, later finding solace here with my whole congregation, said something about this church and this this consciousness that we hadn't ever considered plausible. That's in itself is a story worth the whole.
Yeah, I've never heard
so
you.
Interesting.
Yeah, say it that way. That's interesting.
That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you know how they came up with the title? Why American Heretics? I kind of get the politics of the gospel, the subtitle part of it, but why American Heretics?
So what I first thought, well, that was kind of a bait and switch compared to what I thought they were doing when they came here. I started wondering what angle they took on the movie. And then I watched it and I realized it's a little sneaky. I think that people think of us, Unitarian Universalists, or what Carlton's done, as we're these heretics who are not following the strict, literal interpretation of the Bible. And yet, you know, by the time I'm done watching this movie, I'm thinking... They're making the case that a lot of these Southern Baptists and evangelicals could be argued are the heretics because of the way they're interpreting and using the Bible, in, especially in politics.
Oh, I think the way that the Republican Party has colonized the Christian right and the Christian right has colonized the Republican Party is a whole lot more heretical than anything we're talking about here.
Right, and I think that's what I think that's ultimately what they're trying to say, and so it's a, they kind of flipped the script in a way.
Yeah, which is consistent with the way Brandon Scott teaches about the New Testament too, that, you know, this is Jesus against the empire, but somehow the empire takes over Jesus and presents him as their own. How did this congregation get involved?
In the film itself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the directors came out, they'd heard about us at some point while they were here in Oklahoma, and they just came out to interview me, and I sat right here in my office, and we talked for about an hour, and afterward they said, we think we're going to include you in the film, but we'll get back to you and let you know, and they called me up one day and said, we'd like to bring a team out here and interview you and some of your members, and we said, great. And so I think we were sort of late in the process. I think they'd already started the film before we came on board, and as I watched the film, I thought it might have had something to do with the racial dynamics. I mean, that's an important piece of their the larger story of progressive religion and its hope and its possibility. And I think that they saw what we're doing as a nice companion to what they were doing in Oklahoma City.
A connection that they're not aware of is that when I first came out as a Universalist, one of the first churches I was invited to was Mayflower. I didn't know anything about United Church of Christ. I knew more about UU than UCC. Even though I had friends in UCC like Jeremiah Wright and Bishop Flunder, who is an openly gay pastor in Santa, from my denomination, a black female who I helped consecrate to the bishopric. She's openly gay and was married to a lady who sang Oh Happy Day with the Edwin Hawkins family, which is my denomination, Church of God in Christ. I go to Mayflower on a Sunday morning, and there's a young couple sitting, looking like little hippies or something, no shoes and socks on, sitting out in front of the church, and one stands up and says, almost calls me Unc. I said, and it was Randy Potts, who's Earl's grandson, his youngest daughter's son, and he was married at that time, later on came out to me as a gay man and wanted to know about his uncle who died and was here at this church, Ron and now Randy. And it's like there's some kind of synchronicity that puts us all together in my language in a divine connection. So there's Robin, whom I adored and still do, and this young man who later said, can you help me tell my grandfather who I am and get to meet my grandfather, not meet him, but meet with him before he dies, which I insisted he do. It was just a beautiful coming together of me hooking him up with his grandfather, whom I spent 3.5 hours with, trying to convince him that his gay son, who committed suicide, wasn't in hell, but had been in hell before he committed suicide in his consciousness. And found heaven here at All Souls. And now I'm I'm not just coming here. I've literally merged to this church, and my children, mm-hmm. who remember more about All Souls than they remembered about New Dimensions.
Wow.
Because they were old enough to understand what mm-hmm. you were teaching here.
Mm-hmm.
And my son is still impacted by my daughter. This church helped shape the thinking of my children in a way that I thought mine would.
Religion around here is a lot more complex than people give it credit for.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Is really interesting. Talk to me some about the audience reactions to the film, and if those audience reactions, as you've been around various places in the country, have varied based on where you've been. You know, local reactions versus those who, you know, are truly surprised that this exists in Oklahoma.
I mean, I'll just say that it's been an overwhelmingly positive response. People have had great questions. They're very curious about Carlton. I mean, his story is so compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of questions about him and how he ended up here and what this is like for him and how his life is going. And so, I found that a lot of people don't know that you can still be a Christian or a church-going person in mm-hmm. the United States
mm-hmm.
and hold progressive values and be open to gay and lesbian and transgender people and a lot of the things, because Christianity has become, and church in general, have become so associated with the religious right.
The last 40 years.
That people don't, a lot of people don't even know that you can, that religions like this, religious expressions like this exist.
And I've met so many what I call recovering fundamentalists as mm-hmm. I got out of those circles mm-hmm. and began to move more among the liberal thinkers or the progressive thinkers or the expanded consciousness, new thought type people who still love God, follow the teachings of Jesus, and many love the transcendence of Pentecostalism. They love mm-hmm. the Holy Ghost, and they still, mm-hmm. them still speak in tongues, but they don't want the dogma and some of the doctrines. They've actually thrown mm-hmm. it out. So they're reviewing, revising, not rewriting, but rereading the scriptures
mm-hmm.
and finding mm-hmm. a different relevance. Well, mm-hmm. the things that universalists have been thinking and doing for years, this isn't new to them. Mm-hmm. They're already mm-hmm. in this broad, more progressive appraisal of truth, scriptures, a much more intellectual and sane, less superstitious approach. Mm-hmm. That appeals to me.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'm finding that the biggest growth is going to come from fundamentalists, especially after this next election and the evangelicals' full backing of Donald Trump. There's a group of them that are leaving. The fundamentalists are just saying, I don't want anything to do with it because I'm finding something out about us that I didn't believe was us. And that these family values, moralists, have embraced somebody that doesn't believe in repentance.
I hope you're right.
And says, yeah, me too.
It's something that I think is interesting, just as much as Carlton talks about how much he appreciates the intellectual traditions mm-hmm. of this congregation, mm-hmm. what's I've really appreciated about what he's brought in, his music director, Pastor David Smith and others, is they have an understanding of the transcendent and mm-hmm. and the experience mm-hmm. of almost trance experience that can be created mm-hmm. in worship when mm-hmm. it's done in a particular mm-hmm. way. And so there's an experience of the spirit, mm-hmm. an experience of spirituality that Carlton and his tradition have brought here, and that's created a very interesting balance to what we're doing. There's a mystical, transcendental mm-hmm. kind mm-hmm. of experience, so mm-hmm. that it's taken us out of the intellectual. So some of our folks come for the intellectual,
sure.
You know, get to the point and give me something to chew on all week mm-hmm. that I can mm-hmm. think about mm-hmm. theologically. Mm-hmm. And others now are coming because they want to experience the holy, and they want to come and experience it for an hour, 90 minutes, and walk out feeling differently than they felt when they came in, and really going away having had a real high point spiritual experience that can help carry them through the rest of the week. And to be able to offer both of those things is, for me, just a dream.
Right, quite astounding. What have you learned in the process of doing the movie and then participating in all of it, seeing yourselves reflected back in a way, and then the audience reactions as you've processed all that? What did you think you learned, or the congregation may have learned in the process of participating in it?
The one thing that comes to mind for me is just, we have been saying all along, what we're doing is something significant in American religious experience, mm-hmm. that there have been, you know, really there hasn't been this kind of, these two expressions coming together, this much diversity making religious community together. And so what we're doing is something that is important and potentially can have an impact on religion in American life. And so we say that, but it's kind of like hearing it from us is like singing your own tune. But to see that there's people coming to movie theaters to watch what we're doing and they are taking interest in it, writing about it in the New York Times, Forbes, you know, the Daily Beast and other things, you realize, wow, and my congregation members and even us are sort of like, yeah, it really is true what we were saying. There is interest. This,
it's not just an echo chamber.
It's not just an echo chamber, exactly. Yeah.
And the movie, it awakens or at least makes people aware of a stagnation in the culture that we didn't realize was so anti-growth or progression. People who would have just not paid that much attention to the presence of heretics or heresy in the culture see it brought out and amplified and enunciated in a way that we just sort of taken for, would have taken for granted. Because a lot of them, I have a lot of friends in Chicago who went, and of course we were there in New York. It was D.C. together. I have friends in both places who saw the movie who didn't take the difference that seriously, but when they saw it, they saw how awkward and almost cultic fundamentalism is. Anything that suggests that is the only way or the right way is almost stupid. I mean, people are saying, gosh, I didn't realize how obnoxious we have been. I didn't notice it. I used to think that Dr. Wolf was obnoxious. And I got over here and I thought, geez, he's really making a lot of sense. And Oral knew it and I knew it. We were intrigued. I used to watch him preach. And I was saying it was wrong because I was supposed to say it was wrong, but something in my knower knew that it really wasn't that stupid, that I was being stupid in my reaction to it. So I think it was it's a wake-up call that all of us are much more sensible than our religions allow us or give us permission to be. So the movie, even though I was in it, I saw me and progression as very, very valid and not demonic. I stopped demonizing expansion. I stopped demonizing expression, including mine. I think that there's a softening, just like the glaciers are melting and the ice is thawing out. Religion has been cold and frozen and fixed for a long time, and it's the global warming, even though it may have been triggered by unhealthy practices of science or whatever, I think religion is thawing too. And of course, water is a metaphor for spirit. I think there's a spiritual awakening and a thawing and a ruach, the wind is blowing anew and afresh, and the millennials are picking it up. They're looking in the cloud. I preached a sermon years ago called The Cloud is Moving. When the children, most of the children of Israel, was pillar of fire by night, cloud by day.
Right.
I think the cloud, not the crowd yet, the cloud is moving. We've been following the crowd. And I noticed that the cloud wasn't where the crowd was. And I left the crowd, my crowd, and started following this new cloud, which includes technology and science and spirituality and progression. I'm really fascinated with it in a way I've never been before my whole life.
Marlon, are you as optimistic as he is? Or hopeful as he is? Carlton, I want what you say to be true.
Yeah.
And I'm so afraid there's so many toxins have been dumped in the soil of American culture.
Yeah.
Not all by this president. They've been around a long time. But man, he has brought attention to them and given them new strength and the like.
See, my fundamentalist people are believing that prophetically God put Trump in. And I'm saying if God did, it's only to, I call it a great coming out party for all the haters on the down low. He's shown he's lanced a boil that has been in this country for a long time, and the profuse and somewhat profound odors are coming out of it, and we're realizing this stinks, this is not good. Just like the movie is jarring some people's lethargy or apathy. It's like, wow, we need to change. But it's not saying somebody like Marlon, who's always been changed, he's always been progressive. He's Unitarian Universalist and progressives, and the UCC, they've always been social justice oriented and humanitarians and things like that. We haven't been the fundamentalists. The real move is among that group. They're embarrassed, but they're not going to say it. Now, they still talk to me privately. They defend what they're believing, but they're saying something's really wrong.
Sound like members of Congress.
Yes. Yeah. Well, a Republican. The GOP is just like, they're not blind. They're just blindfolded. I think our culture, religionists are not blind. It's like the alarm is going off and they're awakening and they're pushing the snooze button. sleepy people who are used to the slumber and don't want to wake up will push the snooze button. Eventually, you have to get up. And I'm into that eventuality.
I'm just thinking that I take the long game. My optimism comes from the long game. I think about this, you know, the book, The Third Reconstruction, and how every move towards progress has had a backlash. And I feel like we're in the backlash. Mm-hmm. But I think in the long run, just looking at who the millennials are, what values they have, I believe that this change is going to continue and we are going to move in good directions. However, I think what's paramount is that folks on this progressive side have to be able to represent religion in a way that makes sense to these young people and these new generations, because they're not interested in the old wineskins, but what kind of new wineskins can we create that can hold the vibrant spirit that they are bringing and that wants to come alive in the world? I mean, if you think about how freedom has unfolded in human history, those moments, you know, whether you're talking about Moses and the Israelites leaving Israel, or you're talking about the Christians trying to get their freedom for religion, or the anti-slavery movement, or the gay rights movement, but freedom's unfolding has continued to happen. Liberation has continued to unfold, and I think that we have to just continue to bolster the spirit of liberation and freedom wherever we can find it. And I think that's where God is. I think that's where the holy, if we're looking for where's the holy? People say, Marlon, where's the holy in the world? Where is God alive? I say, look for where freedom is coming into being and where it's being, unfolding into life. That's where God is. That's where the Holy is. Not with the Christians who are persecuting the scientists, but with the scientists who were struggling for the freedom to find the truth. Not with those who were trying to persecute the Jews, but the freedom of the Jews as they were escaping into freedom. So wherever freedom's unfolding, that's where I think the Holy is, and I'm still optimistic about it.
Well, that's great. What a wonderful statement to kind of conclude on. I do want to ask if listeners want to know more about the movie or arrange a screening in their own congregation or community, how do they do that?
They will go to AmericanHereticsTheFilm.com. So AmericanHereticsTheFilm.com, and then there's all that information on the website.
And is there any more progress, getting this to a streaming service or commercially?
They've told us it's going to happen, but I haven't heard where it is right now in that process.
Good. Marlon Lavenhar and Carlton Pearson, thank you so much for spending time with us today on Committing Faith in Public, which you all do very well.
Thank you.
This has been Committing Faith in Public, a podcast from the Religion and Public Life Initiative at Phillips Theological Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Copyright PTS and Gary Peluso-Verdend. The views and opinions expressed during the podcast are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect an official position of Phillips Theological Seminary.